Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso, and on today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing Jasmine Paul from Find and Sustain Podcast. Before we dive in, though, in today's episode, which is amazing, I did want to share that I am super, super excited and so pumped to announce that I am launching a brand new 3-day mini course. It's going to be January 5th through January 7th. I'm super excited because I've heard a lot of great feedback from the episode with Monica about money mindset, and a lot of people who are asking me on how they're in debt or saying they're in debt. They want to get out of debt. They don't know where to begin. And so I'm creating this mini course. If you are someone that stresses about money a lot, if you're tired of being in debt, if you want to start creating wealth, but you just don't even know where to begin, where to start, I definitely want you to sign up for this course. My goal is really to help you dig deep into your money story, uncover what it is, where you came from, rewrite a new money story, and get you in the right frame of mind so that you can actually get out of debt. Because I've heard again and again of people who are trying to get out of debt and they just keep getting back in it and they go through this cycle, and I want to break that. Let's start the new year, right? Let's revolutionize next year before you spend money on all these, you know, resolutions and getting fit and getting in shape. All this stuff costs money. And instead of spending money, let's actually get your money house in order and let's get it right. It's going to be January 5th through the 7th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I set up an Eventbrite. You can register, bring a friend, do this together. I'm really excited for this because I really want to help you just start getting out of debt. Just start getting your house in order and setting the right frame of mind for the future generations. I really, really believe in this. And I really believe we have a responsibility for ourselves and for our kids to just get our money right. So check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. And so today's episode, I want to get back to Jasmine Paul. I'm super excited. You will hear how she literally was homeless in college for 6 months and how she went from that and to owning real estate. It's an incredible story. It's very powerful. I'm so excited. And so without further ado, Jasmine, welcome to today's episode. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jen. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you. Thank you. To get us started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your money story?
Absolutely. So, hey, everyone. My name is Jasmine. And as Jen said, I'm the host of the Find and Sustain podcast, where we find truth while sustaining your purpose. So as everyone who has gone to college, who is a young professional, they have probably been broke in their lives. And I was definitely one of them. I went to school at a private institution called High Point University in North Carolina and did not realize the price tag of my school. And I took out my first loan while in college. And I guess I should back up a little bit just to kind of give you a full background of who I am. I am a military brat. My parents served in the United States Air Force, and I currently serve as well. And
thank you for your service. It's really awesome.
Absolutely. You're welcome. I am proud to serve. And so, you know, my parents were very strict on just disciplining me in a way that I understood the opportunities that were ahead of me. My parents were Caribbean immigrants. They migrated to this country in their 20s, in their teens. And so every opportunity that they gave me was due to a sacrifice that they had to do. And so when I was growing up, I always wanted to work because there was a sense of pride and the sense of value in doing a job, doing it well, but also being able to have some type of reward at the end. And so I was working since I was 13. I was a DJ at an entertainment company, loved entertainment, and then had the opportunity to be a grocery bagger at a local commissary where I made my money off of tips. So basically, you bag the groceries, take it to people's cars, and people tip you. It was pretty cool. Like in any given day, I could make upwards to $300, $400. And as a 15-year-old, that was awesome. And so when I turned 16, one of the store managers actually noticed me and he was like, hey, you know, I noticed you're a really good hard worker. I'd really like for you to join the student store worker program. It's a way for students who are high school students to enter into government service. And so there's a way to get college credits. I did not get college credits, but there is a way that you're able to get college credits. And so I started very young at 16. And by the time I was 18, I was making, I don't know, like $20,000 a year, which as an 18-year-old was pretty good money. And so I used that money, of course, after taxes and after my bills were paid, I used that money for my first semester of college. So I took out a loan my first semester of college. And
you were very ambitious. That's really great.
Oh, yeah. I was all about being independent, getting out from underneath my mom and dad, and just really taking life by the horns. Like, I want to experience life, and I wanted to be able to do it on my terms. And so I went to college and I had a loan. I had the money that I saved from my job, but I also had a student loan. And my mom, my first semester, towards the end of the first semester, she was like, hey, like you cannot keep doing these student loans. You need to find a scholarship or you're going to have to come home. And I was like, oh no, I'm not coming back.
Delaware.
I'm not coming back. I have to finish this. And so I was able to compete for an ROTC scholarship, a Reserve Officer Training Corps scholarship, and I was selected the next semester on a 3.5-year scholarship.
Is this very of a competitive scholarship, or is this accessible to others?
So it is accessible to others, but it is competitive. So at the time, they had 2 slots available for that semester, and there was about 34 people competing.
Congratulations, slots. Then. That's really awesome.
It was a blessing. It was definitely something that I wanted, and you know, I made sure I checked all the boxes in order to achieve it because I really wanted to stay in school. But the scholarship only covered tuition and books, and then I received a stipend. It didn't cover room and board. And so that was an extra expense that I had to get a student loan for. And so I found a way, and y'all, there's always loopholes. So I found a way to expedite my college experience to ensure that I met the 3.5-year scholarship. So instead of staying at school for 4 years, I stayed for 3.5 years to make sure I didn't come out of pocket anymore. And then
it's really smart.
In order to move off campus, you had to be a senior status. So you either had to be 21 or at 92 credit hours. And so I was 18 my freshman year. I came into school with credit hours because I was a dual student my senior year. So I was taking high school credits as well as college credits. And I was able to apply those college credits to my transcript. Well, every semester I took the max number of credit hours, and then in the summertime, I took the max number of credit hours that I could take in order to become a senior status by the time I was in my second semester as a sophomore. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I became a senior the second semester as a sophomore in order to move off campus to have cheaper rent and not have to pay room and board.
And everything was smooth sailing from there, correct?
Absolutely. Kind of.
I'm jumping ahead. I know your story. I'm really excited to get into it.
It's never smooth sailing. So y'all, like, I just share this because I feel like we preach this, you know, one way to success or one way to get to debt free or one way to get to financial independence. And it's not one way. You have to find what works for you. And so I share that part of my story because it was all about making life easier for me and not having a bunch of debt. So I did all this finagling as a sophomore, junior, and found this place where I can live. And so for that year, I had a townhome. I found that townhome on Craigslist, and it was $600 a month. It was a great experience. Well, because I didn't stay over the summer, I had to let go of the townhome, and I ended up interning back in Philadelphia. And so I was looking for a place to live my senior year, the year I was going to graduate. And I kept looking, couldn't really find anything. And so I settled on this apartment. Well, my townhome was all inclusive. So I had rent, water, gas for $600 a month. Well, my apartment was $720, but it didn't include water, trash, gas, electric, internet. It didn't include anything.
What part of the country are you in at this point?
I was in North Carolina. And so I didn't realize that those utility bills were not included, and I didn't realize how expensive they were. And so the first 2 months of me being in my apartment, I couldn't afford it. And so I ended up breaking my lease at the apartment. And I don't even remember paying a break lease fee. I think they just felt really bad for me. And so I ended up living in my car for 2 months and then living on my friend's couch and floor.
I definitely want to talk more about this car and floor, but before we get into that, I just have to ask, because you seem like a go-getter and a hustler. So what was going through your head when you had to give notice and break lease?
It was, I have to figure out how to survive without asking my parents. And there was a level of pride I had because I felt I could have stayed in the townhome, and I believe my mom wanted me to stay in the townhome, but I was like, no, mom, it's okay. I'll find another place. And so I was coming into my senior year. I believe I was 21 at the time. And so I felt like I was an adult now, and it was time for me to make decisions on my own. So I got my apartment on my own, and I just felt like this was the time for me to be independent. And it really was an awful time because I ended up spending 2 nights in a vehicle that, you know, it was very unsafe and very silly decision making.
So you're 21 years old, you're on college campus. Where'd you even park the car? What if some guy just comes up to your window? There's so many things could go wrong.
Or
what if the carbon monoxide leak? Did you think of any of this? What was going through your head at all this?
It was more so like I needed a place to sleep. So my friends were really awesome. So during this time, I was looking for a place to live, but I couldn't figure out where I wanted to live. I wanted to go into a cheaper place, but I was just so discouraged from the apartment situation and the bills, and I didn't know how to calculate how much utilities were going to be. I had really great friends who allowed me to stay in their apartments on their couches. And then I had another friend who was in law school at the time. She allowed me to sleep on her floor. She was like, hey, you can sleep on my bed. But I was too proud. I was like, I'll just take the floor. Just give me some blankets and a pillow. But yeah. And so when I didn't feel like going inside their places, because I didn't want to be a burden to them, I just would go in their apartment. They lived in a gated community. I would go in the apartment complex in front of their apartment and just sleep in my car. So I had tinted windows at the time, in my little 2002 Honda Civic.
So that makes it a little better.
And I would tint, like I would put the little sun visor up. So at night I would put that up, and then I'd put blankets on the windows to make sure no one could really see in. And then I would just go to sleep. I'd have my hoodie on, go to sleep. And then in the morning I'd go in the apartment because they gave me a key. Go in the apartment and shower, brush my teeth, and kept it moving.
So did they know you were sleeping in your car at this point? And did your family know that you were essentially homeless?
No. So they did not know. They knew I would go between their apartment and my other friend's apartment. But I don't think they knew about the whole sleeping in the car thing. No. I didn't tell anybody. I was really ashamed. And I was really wanting to get myself out of the situation. And I did not understand the concept of asking for help. I really wanted to figure it out on my own. Now, hindsight 2020, it's like, okay, Jasmine, all you had to do was ask someone for help. You could have just asked your parents. They would have gladly gave you the extra money to get an apartment or get a safe place to live. I told them now, 10 years later, and they're like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? You're crazy.
But yeah, I gotta say, as a mom, I would not have been happy. If my daughter ever did that, there'd be a lot of words.
There were a lot of words. There are still a lot of words. But I think my mom definitely now sees, she's like, Jasmine is so independent and such a go-getter. That's always been my personality. And so I know she was worried and concerned about me, but she was also like, my daughter is, she's going to be fine. She's always been like that. I'm so grateful she has so much confidence in me, because at that time I did not have confidence in myself. I was like, okay, this is really bad. Like, no one should ever be living in their car because of pride. You know what I mean? People are homeless because they don't have any other options. And I don't know. I felt like I didn't really have another option. And that was only because I was so proud to admit that I needed help.
I think what you said is so important, because when people are in debt or they just feel like they're drowning and don't have options when it comes to their money, I feel that there is this heaviness about them. And I also feel like there's this shaming that people feel. There's a shaming of society that if you're in debt, it's that you did something wrong, which, okay, don't get me wrong, I don't think getting into debt is a good thing by any means, but I also don't blame people for getting into debt, because the school systems don't teach us how to handle money. And oftentimes parents don't know either, because they weren't taught by their parents, and it's just a perpetual cycle. So how would anyone know how to manage their money or even how to get out of debt? And whether in your case, you say it's pride, but that you didn't want to ask for help. And so I just think it's a great lesson learned that if you are in debt or that you are struggling with money, that to first acknowledge it, and then that it is okay to ask for help. Maybe you're not going to ask for help financially, like directly, but ask for help in how can I get out of this? How can I figure out what to do next? Because if you're in your head living like that got you into the debt, unless you change something or unless you figure it out, and I oftentimes a lot of people just don't know how to do it until you get a third party or just someone else to help you, I feel like it is very hard. And so if you are in debt and if you are listening, so you feel like you're struggling with money, it's okay. Just acknowledge it and then get some help. And so, Jasmine, at this point in your life, how did you get out of this, from living in your car, living between people, as you said, essentially homeless? What were your next steps?
Yeah. So my friend who was in law school approached me after a few weeks, and she was like, hey, this room that you're staying in is empty, because remember, I'm on the floor with a bunch of blankets and pillows, and it was an empty room. And she lived in this big house with, it was two other people. And so I would make the third person. And so she was like, hey, this room is available. The rent is super cheap. Just live here. And I was like, okay, that works. And so the rent was $200 a month. I had my own bedroom. I had to share a bathroom with another female, and it was cool. We were all like-minded. Everybody was either working or in school, and it was a great thing. Everything was included for $200. I couldn't beat that. And so after a few weeks, I met with the landlord. She was like, yep, I think you'd be a good fit to live in the house, and signed the lease, and it was done. And I wasn't living in my car anymore.
And then, so now, where are you today?
So I graduated college. I graduated with $37,000 in debt. I entered into the military, and my goal was, I don't ever want to be in a place where I'm homeless and I'm not collaborating with other people, where I'm too proud to ask for help. And so one of the things that I did when I graduated and started working was I started asking people for investment advice. I started asking people about real estate. And I remember seeing one of my friends in college. He was a junior. He bought this home that was across the street from the campus for about $17,000 or like $12,000. I don't remember what it was. But he bought it really, really cheap. And it was not a nice house. It was a rundown house. But he ended up renting out the rooms of the homes to his fraternity brothers. And that house he still owns today, and he still rents out the rooms to his fraternity brothers. And I thought that was such a cool concept. And I was like, wow, I want to do that one day. I want to be able to have a house that I own and rent it out to people, provide a safe, affordable, economical space for others, because I felt when I was going through my situation, I didn't know where to turn and I couldn't afford an apartment. And so having one room in a house with other people who were like-minded, who were young professionals, that was a blessing for me. And so I left college with $37,000 in debt. I ended up getting roommates at my first duty location, which was in California. And I saved about 40% of my paycheck.
Amazing. How did you do that? 40% is no chump change.
Yeah. So because I had roommates, I believe rent was $1,200 and we were able to split it three ways. And so I was only paying $400 a month. I was able to use the rest of the money. So the military, we get a basic allowance for housing. And because of the rates being so high in California, I was able to save a significant amount of my housing money as well as my salary money, my base pay, towards savings. And so I ended up saving a significant amount over the course of about 7 months, paid down some of my student loans, and then the next year I bought a home where it was, the rent was more than my BAH. And when I basic allowance for housing.
Okay.
So the rents in the area were more than my BAH. But a mortgage was less than the rents, and it was, I believe, equal to my BAH. So it just made more sense to buy a home and to live, to not come out of pocket for rent. And so I bought this home. It was a 5-bedroom, 2-bath, and I ended up renting out the rooms similar to what I did in college.
That's awesome. Yeah. My husband and I are actually doing the same strategy right now called house hacking, essentially where you live in one. Well, for us, we bought multi-families. We lived in one unit and had our tenants pay a good portion of our mortgage. Now we're living in high-end good neighborhoods with good schools.
Yeah.
Well, but it's, oh, the strategy is fantastic because the amount of money it's cost us to live in this area is significantly less by doing it this way than if we were to buy a single family home or even if we were to rent. So even though we're not making money on these houses, we're living in a great area, paying significantly less. That's allowing us to save. And then we figured over time, we're going to eventually, this is our strategy. We bought one house for each kid. And then eventually houses are paid off. This will be their college fund or whatever. So even though essentially we're net zero, we're paying less than it would cost us to live. Even if we cash flow zero, we don't care because someone else is paying for it. So then when...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fantastic strategy. That's great you did it.
I absolutely agree with that strategy. I think it's amazing. It was awesome for me, especially I was single, well, still single, but I was single, no kids, and I had this huge home that was relatively inexpensive for a mortgage. And while I wasn't really making any money, well, that's not true. Because the roommates, I ended up making a little bit of money, but the money that I would have been spending in my mortgage, I ended up paying off my debt. And so I had $37,000 when I graduated at 21, 22, and then by the time I was 24, I paid everything off.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so good. And I know a lot of the listeners are probably thinking or in a lot of debt too, or maybe student loan debt or car debt or credit card debt, and thinking, how can I get out of it? But you set such a good example. So I know you're not a mom yet, but are an aspiring mom. Yes. But I think your story is just so valuable, literally from homelessness to owning. And now how many homes do you have now?
So right now I have one rental property. I had two. I sold the one that was in the Northwest last year, which was, it was a rental, and then I just got tired of it. It was more of a headache for me, so I sold that and currently working on buying either a single family home or a multifamily home.
Oh, well, good luck to you.
Thank you. Yes, I'm excited.
do you know what market are you, going to do it in your local market or are you looking at a state?
No, my local market is very expensive. It's a shame that houses go for, I mean, the median price house in this market is about $320,000 and I'm not about that life. Like, that is not my end. I'm looking for like $50,000, $60,000 homes that are safe and economical for people that are working class citizens who need a safe place to live. So I'm looking at Montgomery, Alabama, as well as in Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, I don't even want to tell you what Northeast is, but I could tell you the median income in this area, or at least the median home, a decent 3-bed, 2-bath is at least 5 to 6.
That's crazy.
And unless you're buying a total rehab gut, maybe 3 or 4. That's pushing.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I hear you on that. And we're actually in the process of thinking of investing out of state too. But
yeah, it's just, you can get so much more for your money. And while it's a little bit of headache, long distance investing, it's not hard and it's not rocket science. I was managing 2 properties in Afghanistan and South Korea. So it is absolutely doable. It takes a little bit more time, a little bit more effort and energy, but it is possible. Don't let out-of-state investing scare you. You just need to do your research and honestly just jump in and do it. It's very possible to do.
So I know we could spend another hour on this topic, but I'd like to just go in a little bit further, diving in a little bit more on how did you actually manage your properties being not even out of state, but out of the country?
Absolutely. Initially, for my first rental, I had a property manager and it proved to be an awful experience. I was hesitant about the property manager because I felt like no one really loves your property or your investment like yourself because they don't really have any skin in the game. They don't have a mortgage that they have to pay, you know, regardless if it's vacant or if it's occupied. And so I had a very turbulent relationship with my property manager to the point where I ended up firing him. And so because I fired him, I had to figure out how to manage the property. And what I found is that it's similar to being a homeowner. Being a property manager, you're managing the property, you're maintaining the home, and you're making sure your tenants are happy and making sure they're following your rules. For example, I was in Afghanistan and the hot water heater went out. So I got on the phone with the company that had serviced my hot water heater in the past. And I called them. I said, hey, can you connect with my tenants to make sure they get a new hot water heater and to figure out, you know, what the problem was? I also had a home warranty, which to me was beneficial because my home was built in, I believe, 1962. And so it was an older home. It had been renovated, but it had, like, the hot water heater was older. I had a new AC in it, but there were some things that were older. And I knew that if I didn't invest in the home warranty, I would have to come out of pocket. So my hot water heater ended up being $75 versus I think something like that would run maybe upwards to $1,800, if not more. And so So having that and having my tenants, they had the number to call the home warranty, they kind of did that. So they would just let me know and then I would pay the bill. And it was a really great relationship. I use Cozy. So Cozy.co, which is a property management software. I use that to screen my tenants as well as to input the lease. I used easylandlordforms.com to create my lease. I also used lawyers to make sure that my lease adhered to the state landlord tenant law to make sure there was nothing illegal. And honestly, I just figured it out as I went. I made sure I had a separate business account, so I kept my finances separate, so personal finances and business finances. I have my accountant at the end of the year. He looks over all of my expenses to make sure it makes sense and that I'm paying my taxes accordingly. But yeah, it was a pretty cool experience.
And how did you show the house being in Afghanistan?
Yes. Okay, so that's a big one. And that's the hardest thing. I feel like out of the entire process, showing the home is the hardest thing. So I invested in really great pictures of the house. I hired a photographer who does real estate photography. And I think that's important. In this day and age, people want to see a good property and they want to see that someone is invested in their property. And so for me, if I see camera phone pictures of your property on a listing, I'm not going to take you seriously. Mm-hmm. And I also use them for if I want to sell the home in the future, I'm going to use these pictures because they're that good. But so I made sure I had great pictures, I had a good description, and I hired what is called a Millie Scout. And so people are probably wondering, what in the world is a Millie Scout? Yeah. So, you know, I am in the military and I take advantage of the different resources that they have out there. So the Millie Scout is a military spouse who is local to your area. I actually hire them to inspect the property. I do quarterly inspections. And so to make sure the property is ran well and it's up to date, the grass isn't outrageous or there are no leaks or anything. So I hire the Millie Scout and I talk to them. It's kind of like a contracted service. So these are military spouses who understand the military. They understand you're out of town and they help people show the property. So you can hire them. Like, let's say you want to see a property and you're not there to see it yourself. They'll go in, they'll take pictures, they'll do a video tour with you, and then you pay them like $7,500, and then they'll send you the pictures and all the information and let you know how the property is. So I hire them to walk through the property with someone. Or for my property that's in the Northeast, I have family members who would walk the property with the people.
Could you have hired an agent? Because this Millie Scout thing is awesome. I'm assuming you have to be military, but I'm curious if there's something similar like that even just for other people who are non-military.
I'm pretty sure. So this is definitely catering to the military. What I found with the real estate agent is, and I recently had this experience, I don't know if they're necessarily hungry enough to get the property rented. Just in my own experience, I could be wrong. I know there are other people who use realtors. But for me, when I was using them as a only solely getting the tenant, I just felt it was kind of challenging to get the tenant. To me, it just wasn't as aggressive as I would like it to be. And so actually, in my current situation, so I was a property manager for about 3 years. And so I actually hired a property manager. So I'm trying it again. It's in a different market. And this person has a lot of great experience. They had a really great portfolio. And I checked out the references. So prayerfully, y'all keep me in prayer because my house is currently vacant. And I'm praying that I get a tenant in the next couple of weeks. Of course, it's the winter season. It's kind of hard to find tenants. But I'm hopeful and I believe that it'll get rented soon. But yeah, it's why I decided not to continue with property management. And I was sharing this with you, Jen, earlier, is there are other things in my life that I want to accomplish. There are other goals in my life that I want to accomplish. And so sometimes you can't do everything yourself. And I'm learning that I can't do it all excellent. And that's what I want to do. I want to be excellent in every business venture. I want to be excellent in my job, you know, my career. And so in order to be excellent, there are things that I have to be able to take off my plate and be willing to give to someone else. And so I believe that me going through that not so great experience with the first property manager, doing property management myself for the last 3 years, I've been able to establish a baseline where I know what I look for in a property manager and I give them my expectations up front. Like, this is what I am willing to accept and this is what I won't accept. And I expect you in this relationship, in this partnership, to be in agreement with me. And if you're not, then I need to find somebody else.
I was just going to actually ask you what you learned from the first property manager that you've changed and implemented now with the current one.
Oh, absolutely. So I learned that the contract is very important. So spelling out everything that you desire in the contract is important. But what I also learned, and this is what some property managers do, is they don't inspect the property as often as I thought it should be inspected. And I learned that they have maintenance visits. Instead of doing an inspection to check in, they have a maintenance visit where they're actually, I don't know, changing out batteries of the smoke detectors, or they're checking the AC filter. Because what people desire is a place that's not really a rental. They desire a home. They desire a safe place for their family. So if you're constantly doing quarterly checkups, someone's going to be like, I don't want to live here. This doesn't feel like home for me. And so I learned that the maintenance visit versus the quarterly inspection is something that you can do, not only maintain the property, but you're also, you can do a checkup, quote unquote, in that visit. But I learned from when I didn't check up on my property, or at least didn't do my inspections, I had tenants for a longer time than when I did do my quarterly inspections, because I was like so stringent in, they need to make sure that they're changing the air filter and there are no leaks and all this other stuff. But then you have to realize that people want a home. They don't want somebody that's going to be enforcing all these rules to the point where it's not a home anymore. And so from my own management, I learned that while, yes, you want to protect your investment, you have to understand where other people are coming from. And I've been a renter, and so I get it now. Like, I don't want somebody to just pop up, give me 24 or 48 hour notice, and just pop up just to check in on me. What if my house is messy? It is what it is. I'm not smoking. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm not doing anything illegal. Trust me. And I think in the whole vetting process in the beginning, that's where you can see where people are at. I mean, of course, you have people that just are professional tenants and they don't want to pay rent. But I think that initial process in the beginning is very important. So if you have someone who's difficult in the beginning, they're probably going to be difficult in the process, you know, so you don't choose to rent to them. But I learned that through just doing it myself. I think I had a different perspective when I first started to now.
That's awesome. I'm the same mindset. We may go check out in the house once a year. We're investing locally, so my husband still likes to go over and he'll, in the fall, get the leaves and do the gutters right. And stuff. But our tenants are actually really appreciative, or if something goes wrong, we'll go check it out, but because we live close by. But otherwise, if they don't bother, we don't really go. And I think it's actually worked out. I agree with you. To the benefit of both parties, because then we don't feel like we need to go there all the time. And granted, we're living in good areas. It's a good town. And so they don't want to live in a bad area, and they're not going to mess up a house either, because the other houses are all nice too. So
Right. Exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, I'd like to transition now into our lightning round. These are...
Absolutely.
I'm ready. All right. Awesome. Well, I'm going to ask you the same four questions I ask all my guests. Question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Oh, gosh. We did this. Fun fact. I know how to speak Arabic, Japanese, and Dari.
Awesome. That is a really cool fun fact.
Yeah.
Like, are you fluent, or can you get by conversationally?
I can get by.
Can you read it too? So
I can read a little bit of Japanese. Dari, if it's the bathroom or a stop sign. Yeah.
What about, I kind of know Hebrew, so yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but Arabic... I speak a little Hebrew.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Namaiwa Jasmine Des, which is my name is Jasmine.
Awesome. In Japanese. Very cool. You have to teach me one day. That's awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, awesome. Well, question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
Definitely Mom Dukes. I love that woman. My mother is truly an inspiration. Just her story of coming to America and making a life for herself, joining the military, having other jobs. She worked three jobs when she was raising me. It's just so encouraging to see her passion and her will to want to help people. She is truly passionate about bringing the best out of people, and that's something that I love about her. And that's something that I feel I want to continue on in her legacy of just making sure that I'm not only being my best, but I'm able to bring out the best in others. I think that that's so important. She's amazing. Like she doesn't even know it. If I can be just half of the woman that she is when I'm her age, that would be a blessing.
That's really, really sweet. I hope your mom hears this and appreciates
it. I hope so too. I'm going to send her the podcast. She's a great lady. Yeah. Shout out to moms.
Great. Question number three is, what book are you reading now or have recently read that you totally love and would recommend?
Yes, it is Master of One by Jordan Rayner, who's also the author of Call to Create. I love this book. It's about finding your focus and focusing on that one thing that God has purposed you for. And so as I was sharing with you the importance of just letting go certain things that I'm not very good at, that I'm not doing excellent in, and being okay with, okay, letting those things go for a moment or putting a pause on it so that way I can invest my time into other areas that are really shaping my purpose to serve other people.
That sounds really cool. I'm going to put that in the show links for my listeners.
Yes. So it's amazing. I'm authoring a book called Set Your Truth Free. And I've been a fan of Jordan for the last couple of years. And so I was like, well, I want to launch a book. I need to figure out how to launch a book. So I joined his launch team to figure out like what it is to launch a book. And so it's really cool. So I'm learning and taking some tips for my own, but also I'm able to be in this journey with him.
Well, it's no wonder how you could literally go from homelessness to owning real estate, a military guru, and now book write author. You're just such a hustler, and it shows in everything that you do. And I know that the goals that you have set for yourself between now and the end of the year, I know you're going to go after them hard, and I know you'll accomplish them. I know this book will come out, and I'm excited to read it when it does.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that, Jen. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, no, you could just from this podcast, you could hear it in your voice, how passionate you are. So it's really great.
Thank you.
Well, the last question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their own personal journey to financial independence?
Oh, that's good. Actionable tip is just go for it. I think we spend a lot of time listening to podcasts, researching. We spend a lot of time doing that, and I think that's necessary. You need to be aware of what's going on, and you need to know what you're getting into. You need to know what you qualify for, know the market. Is this a good market? You need to understand the structure of the home. Are you going to have plumbing issues for the next 5 years? Are you going to have roof issues? The lawn is it going to be negative drainage or positive drainage? You need to understand that. But I will say, as a 29-year-old, looking back when I was 23, I did not have any of the technology that we have now. There are calculators that will calculate a really great deal for you. There's Zillow and Redfin and Realtor and all these different apps that will help you out. I didn't have all that information. And I had a dream to not be homeless and to get out of debt. And I went after it. By any means necessary. Of course, that was legally moral and ethical, but it was by any means necessary. I was hungry to do it. And so I just challenge people out there as an actionable tip is to do it. Write your goals down and really understand, okay, what am I trying to do in the next 2 months, in the next 6 months, in the next year? What is it that I really want to do? They talk about SMART goals, so specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time specific. Make that SMART goal and then go after it. So often we have these vision boards and we really want to do things and it would look awesome to go to South Africa. Well, if you want to go to South Africa, then make a plan, write it down, hang that plan up somewhere in your house and then do it. And then if something does happen, because life happens, be okay with the changes and adjust accordingly. But I feel I just want to tell somebody to just go after it. Whatever dream that is, my dream was to write a book. That was my absolute biggest dream ever. And now I'm able to see that dream actually come to life. It took about 7 years. It took a while because...
Oh, so you're an overnight success.
It took a while to get to the end product, but that was a goal of mine. I mean, on every goal for the new year, every goal plan that I had, writing the book was one of them. And I wrote that thing down and I made it plain and I was speaking this. And so the last thing I want to leave the guests, so just do it. But also what my friend, one of my really great friends who is an entrepreneur, she taught me is to speak it as if it's already here. So what I mean by that is when I was writing my book, she was like, you need to tell people you're an author. And I was like, no, the book's not done. She's like, no, you need to tell people you're an author so that people will see that gift inside of you and start asking you questions about your project. It will help you gain more confidence. And so I remember I went to a conference and I told people I was an author. And they were like, oh my God, what's your book about? We have to hear about the book. Let's connect about the book. I met publishers. I met people who own bookstores. And if you're an investor, or let's say you're an up-and-coming investor, as I said before, jump in, just do it. But if you're still kind of on that fence of, oh, I'm not really sure, I don't know if I'm qualified, start telling people you're an investor. I bet you will have people who are looking for people to invest. They're looking to put their money somewhere, and maybe you're that conduit in order to seal the deal. It's been successful in my life I've told people I was an entrepreneur. I told people I was an investor, a real estate investor, and people have brought me deals. And I was like, oh, shoot, this is cool.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah. So speak it, share it, and then do it.
I'm a big believer in that too. I think that's really great advice. It's once you can actually visualize it, then it's actually real and attainable.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on today's episode. It was really great having you. I know I learned a lot. I'm sure others have as well. How can we connect to you if we want to learn more information or we want to hear more about your story or have a question?
Absolutely. So people can go to findandsustain.com. That's findandsustain.com. They can also send me an email at findandsustain@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram at findandsustain and then check out my book, Set Your Truth Free.
Awesome. And I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate this opportunity. And to the Investor Mama, just collaborative, collective, and just the community, I am so excited for this community of just investors, women who are really trying to make a legacy and leave a legacy for their family. I'm just so in awe of the different women that you have on this platform. And I'm blessed and honored to be a part. It's amazing. And speaking that into existence, so this investor will be a mom one day, married and then mom. So I appreciate you.
Awesome, Jasmine. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. And I love your story. And thank you for sharing so many wonderful tips for investing out of state.
Absolutely. No problem.
All right. That wraps up another amazing Investor Mama episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did like today's episode and the other episodes that have already aired, please go to the platform that you are listening to and subscribe. Also, if you wouldn't mind going over to Apple, just leave me a rating. It really, really helps get me on the Apple charts and go higher so that more people can hear the Investor Mama content. And I would just really appreciate it. I'll put a link in the show notes. Just take 2 seconds out of your day, literally go to Investor Mama on Apple Podcasts. And if you wouldn't mind leaving me a rating and a review, that would be amazing. I would so appreciate it. And so I hope everyone is enjoying their holiday season. Please, please, one thing I did want to mention is do not overspend. I know this time of year, it's so easy to want to spend money in, especially with COVID and you haven't seen family members and there's guilt and there's all these things tied to the holidays, but really try to keep to a budget. It's okay not to spend things. And if you have kids, maybe instead of getting them tons of toys and tons of gifts, I wrote an article, I'll put a link into the show notes too, about having people invest in 529 plans and other ways that will help propel your kids into the future. So there's strategies to do that. Just, you know, this time of the year, I again just want to put that reminder because I know people can get overzealous in their spending, to say the least. And I encourage you to be mindful of your spending. I just want you to go into 2021 with a bang. And that's why I put together that mini course. I'll put a link to that again in the show notes, but it's going to be January 5th through the 7th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be really great. I'm going to bring it. I promise you won't want to miss it. Let's get excited for 2021. Let's start the new year right. Let's forget about 2020, or let's learn from 2020 and just move forward, get excited about the future, because I promise you it will be amazing. This is Investor Mama. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.